picture of this guy. He's a bit of a pantomime baddie. This is Luis Suarez, who is an amazing footballer. He scores loads and loads of goals, but he's a bit of a guy who likes to win at all costs. And sometimes that means that he cheats a little bit. And he does have this unfortunate habit of biting people. This was the latest incident where he bit this Italian player called Chiellini. And does anybody know what was the punishment he got for it? Any ideas? 4 months. Yeah. He got banned from football, banned from doing anything to do with football. Though I think he's appealed, and maybe something's changed with that. But he wasn't allowed to play football for 4 months. Some people thought that was a bit harsh, but I personally thought it was all right. You can't go around biting people at work. So that was what happened to him. I'm going to show you another picture now of a young lad who's not so famous, and his name is Jake, and he's from Manchester, and he was playing for his local team. This was in the papers a couple of weeks ago. I think they're called Moston Valley, his local team. And allegedly, after the game, he spat on his hand and wiped it on the back of the referee. It's pretty disgusting, isn't it? It's pretty gross. He says he didn't do it. I don't know if he looks sorry there or if he just feels a bit bad. But that's what he did. And what happened was this got reported to the Manchester Football Association, and it came back to him that he was banned for football until August 2021. So banned from football for 7 years. That's 6 years and 8 months longer than Luis Suarez got for his biting. And the point is that somebody who was on that panel obviously heard about what had happened and thought, spitting and wiping it on the referee, that is so disrespectful, that is so disgusting, that this lad deserves a really, really long punishment. He deserves not to play football for a long, long time. And it seems a bit extreme. I think maybe that one's being looked into as well. But this seems to be how we see spit. Some of you will have looked at the title of this preach and thought, oh, spit. Somebody said to me, could it not have just said, Jesus heals with saliva? And we have that sort of that feeling when we say the word spit, of it being something disgusting. It's something disrespectful, something we associate with anger, something we associate with spreading of diseases. If you're anything like me, and this is bad, if you're in a conversation with somebody and they spit on you by accident, you're just waiting for that moment where they either look away or it finishes and you can just get rid of it. Get rid of it off your face. You lose all sort of concentration. But that's part of our culture, that we think saliva shouldn't come near our face. And for that reason, these passages can seem a bit strange, a bit unusual, a bit like Jesus has lost the plot. So we're going to take a look at these, explore what exactly is happening. What was Jesus doing with these passages? And there's two passages in Mark where Jesus uses saliva in two different healings. So we're just going to turn to Mark 7:21, which is the first one. If you've not got a Bible, I'm sure the hospitality team will give you one. I think it's 955 in the church Bibles. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven, and with a deep sigh, he said to him, "Ephphatha," which means "be opened." At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. "He's done everything well," they said. "He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak." And the second passage is, if you just flip over the page in the church Bibles, is in Mark 8 from verse 22. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home, saying, "Don't even go into the village." Okay, so two amazing, slightly strange stories of Jesus's healing. Two stories where we've seen full transformation. And we're going to look at the content of that, but just for a minute, let's just take a second and see where we're up to in Mark. So far, I think a few of the summer preachers have mentioned about how fast this gospel is. So there's been so much that's happened in quite a short amount of time so far. So we've had Jesus healing lepers, he's healed a paralytic man, he's brought a girl back from the dead, he's walking on water, he's calming storms, he's teaching in parables, he's teaching about the law. There's so much that has happened. And these crowds seem to build wherever he goes because of all that's been happening. And it's getting to a point where it's a little bit dangerous for Jesus because he knows that his opponents are plotting against him. He knows that there's this negative publicity that's happening, and he knows what's to come. And it comes at a fascinating point in this. These passages come because they come at a point where Jesus is trying to keep a bit of a lower profile. And it comes at a point where the disciples are on this journey. We've heard as the weeks have gone on and the blunders they keep making. And this passage comes at quite a significant point where they're sort of beginning to see just who Jesus is and starting to realize just who he is and what he's come to do. And this comes sort of right in the middle of all that. So what I want to do is look at three parallels between these stories, three things that happen in both. That we can look at, that we can explore, and that we can find out a little bit more about Jesus' character through these. As Mark goes on, you see the disciples understand more and more of who Jesus is and his character, and I hope that through these three things, we'll be able to understand a little bit more of Jesus' character. So the first thing we're going to look at is this spit. We're going to come back to that, back to the saliva. The first thing we're going to look at is why does Jesus use saliva? We looked at our culture, but why does he do it in this context? The second thing that we'll look at is this interaction, the fact that in both these stories, Jesus leads both men away from the crowds and touches them in their afflictions. It's very physical. And what does that mean for our relationship with Jesus? What does that mean for our relationship with other people? And the third thing that we're going to look at is the fact that Jesus really discourages publicity in both of these, and what are people's response to that, and what does that mean about our response to all that Jesus is doing. So, saliva, we'll come back to that, this nice topic. What does it mean for these people? We know in this passage, in the first one, it talks that they go through Tyre and Sidon and through the Decapolis. And from that, we know that they're going into a Gentile territory. But it's quite common for both Gentiles and Jews to see, at this time, to see saliva as having medicinal properties. That they would put saliva on boils, on sores, on wounds, on eye diseases. It wouldn't have been uncommon. They will have seen healers use saliva. This wouldn't have seemed like a really, really unusual thing. And although for some of those people that might have had sort of magical or superstitious kind of things to do with it, it's not an irrational thought to see saliva as aiding healing. It is actually a natural antiseptic. So that intuitive thing that we see animals and mums do, of licking, putting their saliva on wounds, is quite a normal thing to do. That when saliva reaches the acidic surface of skin, it forms this substance. So I didn't know this before I looked into it. It forms this substance called nitric oxide, which stops microorganisms growing and kills them. So it does aid healing, putting saliva on wounds. I didn't know that. And when I was looking into this, I even found there was this article about these fishermen in Fiji who, what they do is, because they get a lot of wounds in their day job, when they get home, they let their dogs lick all of their wounds, and they found that I don't know if it's to do with the breed of dogs or not, I'm not sure, but it makes their wounds heal a lot quicker. I don't have a dog, so it doesn't appeal to me, but if you've got one, you might want to try it this week. I'm not sure if it works with other animals, hamsters, guinea pigs, give it a go, and see how you get on this week. But the point is that this wasn't an irrational kinds of thought that saliva might help healing, and it was quite normal for healers to use. And the other part of this healing is that it's a really physical healing. Jesus touches both men in the places where they're afflicted. But we can see throughout Jesus' ministry, but this isn't unusual. For it to be so physical isn't an unusual thing. In Mark, I think there's just two instances where Jesus is healing somebody who's sick, rather than it being demon-possessed or an evil spirit, where it's a physical fault in the body. Jesus always uses physical touch. And the two instances where he doesn't, I think, is the healing of the paralyzed man, where the focus becomes very much on Jesus' interactions with the scribes. And the second is the healing of Bartimaeus, where it's not mentioned that there was any physical touch, but it's not said there wasn't either. Every other healing, there's always physical touch. So the fact that this was so physical, the fact that he used saliva, it wouldn't have seemed unusual. A couple of months ago, me and Joshua went to his older sister's wedding, which was very nice. This is the beautiful couple. So we went to their wedding. They actually live in Spain. They live in Valencia. Becky, Josh's sister, has lived in Spain for quite a long time now, a few years. I'm not sure how many, but ages. So she's fluent in Spanish. Tony, her husband, is born and bred in Valencia. I think he understands a lot of English, but he's not that confident in speaking it. And a few days before the wedding, they thought it would be a great idea if Tony's family all went for a meal with Josh's family, and then they would all know each other before the wedding. So we went for this big meal. There's probably 10 of Josh's family. He's one of six. There's quite a lot of them. And then all of Tony, probably about 10 people from Tony's family. And we had this big meal, and I think you could see, as you do see when people who can't speak the same language, so there was nobody from Josh's family that could speak Spanish, nobody from Tony's family that could speak English. So Becky was doing her best translating, and everyone else was just getting by. They were just sort of trying to speak in their own language, maybe sort of speaking a bit louder like people do, like that's going to help. But you could see people's hand movements suddenly emphasized. You could see people miming what they were trying to say, putting the odd words here and there that they knew. I've got a GCSE in Spanish, but I can only ask sort of if you've got a part-time job. And that that only gets you so far, and then I don't understand what people say back, so so I didn't use that one. But you could see it just became really physical. It became something where the words that we spoke were not going to be enough to communicate, to show people that we were really trying to engage, to put each other at ease. You could see both families really wanting to make this a positive experience. People would just got these really emphasized hand movements, and the language became really physical. And there's part of me that looks at this story, and Jesus, in the first one, he's speaking to a man that's deaf. He's speaking to a man that can't hear what's happening. So what does he do? He touches him in his ears. He touches him in his mouth, and he will feel that, and he will see what Jesus is doing. And with the saliva, he will recognize that and know that that is to do with healing. In the second one where the man's blind, Jesus again touching his eyes, sharing his saliva. It might just be that Jesus is physically communicating to these people where maybe they can't hear or where they can't see what is happening. He's putting them at ease, and he's making them expectant to be healed, that they'll know exactly what's happening and what he's trying to do through this. So we can make it stranger than maybe what it is. Maybe Jesus is just communicating what he's doing. But the important thing to remember in this is that all of Jesus' healings seem different. These two seem different, and these are the only two that use pure saliva. I think there's one in Mark where he mixes it up with a bit of mud and does it that way, which is different. And then every healing seems to be different. It's not about a sequence of actions. It's not about a ritual. Jesus does so many different things that he does the opposite. He stops us from putting our confidence in any set way and any actions, but it's purely in the power of God. This is what has the power to heal, not sort of the actions, however strange they seem to us. So that's hopefully saliva. The second thing that I want to talk about is the fact that Jesus takes both of these men away from the crowds, and he has this very physical interaction with them. So we know that Jesus, at this point, he's got no interest in making any sort of spectacle. He's got no interest in adding another healing to this amazing ministry and being more famous. He's trying to keep a lower profile. So he sees these men, and both of them are brought by other people, and he sees them as individuals, and he's moved with compassion. And for both of them, we hear that he takes them away from the crowds. With the second one, it says even he takes him by the hands. The second man was blind, so he takes him by the hands away from the crowds, and we hear that he touches them in their where their afflictions are. And we've got to remember, this is God in human form. He even shares his bodily fluid with them. This comes across to me as such an intimate interaction, something where Jesus takes both of these men away from where they are, focuses on them, and has this really closeness with them. And if this makes us squeamish, it makes us a bit uncomfortable, then that's got to be a challenge to us, because this is who Jesus is. We can see this here, that when he's dealing with our brokenness, that he doesn't want any distance. This is the sort of intimacy that Jesus desires to have with us. And in this first story, we then hear that Jesus, after he's touched this man in his afflictions, makes this deep sigh to heaven. In some translations, it says it's like a groan. When I read this, I see this as such a compassionate response. He's just had this intimate interaction with this man. And what does he just go and heal him? He doesn't. He cries out to heaven. There's a real sense of this being a human response, of him being affected by this man's afflictions, that he would cry out to heaven over this. I love that song that we sing at the moment, that singing over us. And one of the lyrics is shoulder to shoulder, you stand with us. And this is the picture that I get here, that Jesus is stood with this man and in his afflictions, that he feels his pain and he has to cry out to heaven over this. There's an N.T. Wright quote that I've got that I'm just going to put on the screen, and it says this: healing can never simply be a matter of correcting a few faults in the machine called the human body. It always was and is a sign of God's love breaking through the painful and death-laden present world. And this is what we get in this healing. It's not just Jesus sees a fault, he fixes it, end of story. It is he feels the afflictions of this man. He cries out to heaven. There's this sense of love breaking through. This is a process. It's not just a quick fix. Jesus is affected by this and then restores this man. And this is a real challenge to us, I think, in our relationships with other people. We've spoken quite a bit about the homeless lunch in this service so far. But that's a real challenge to sort of what we do on a Sunday. We have a lot of people that come in really difficult circumstances, no housing, often no job, often very isolated, no family, suffering with addictions, or they've got housing, but there's still a lot of stuff they need. They're very isolated, they're far away from maybe the people they were with. They've got nothing sort of in their house. And it's so easy on a Sunday that you sit down with someone and you hear their story and you hear what they're going through, and all you're thinking is, oh, right, how can we fix that? How can we get this guy a fridge or a cooker if he's just moved in here? We've got volunteers that can do that. And if you're suffering with addictions this week, then have you seen this program that's running here? There's this going on in Barnet at the moment. We can sort this out, rather than there being some sort of process. And that's all good and done with good intentions. And we want to practically support. We want to bring hope. But there's got to be a sense of us doing what Jesus does in this healing, of just saying to these people that we're here, I sit with you now, and I feel that pain. I feel what you're going through. We're not just going to fix it, but we're alongside you. And we're going to cry out to God. We're going to pray about this. And we might practically look at doing this, but we're alongside you, that we've got to feel some of the pain that Jesus feels. That if he, when he's healing someone, is crying out to God and feeling that sorrow, then all the more, how much more do we need to do that? We can't expect to fix stuff. So for me, I'm talking about the homeless lunch, but in your situation, You know, I'm sure there's people that maybe you need to just get alongside and feel that, and you're looking at how you can fix stuff maybe if you're anything like me. And actually, we just need to be with people and show that we're going to be with them in their pain. I think this is how God wants us to feel what he feels, because it's obvious in this story that it is a painful process for Jesus. And I think it's easy to put Jesus in two different categories. Sometimes we can think of him as this amazing human teacher, speaking amazing parables, speaking this amazing teaching on the law, and we can forget all the supernatural power that he has to restore, to make things new. And on the other side, we can read through the Gospels and see all of these healings and miracles and think, gosh, Jesus just went around fixing everything and sorting creation out. But actually, this healing is a real revelation of who God is, because these two meet and you've got this intimate interaction, this compassion, this sorrow, and this meets with the power to restore, to make both of these men new. And that's who God is. And those two are fully meet in the middle. And that's a challenge to our intimacy with Jesus. It's a challenge to how we're intimate with others and how we're seeking restoration for others as well as restoration for ourselves. The third point was about Jesus discouraging publicity. So Jesus commands both of these, well, the first man, he says, don't tell anyone. He tells the people that have seen it, don't tell anyone. And they ignore him completely. And in the second passage, he doesn't specifically say don't tell anyone, but he says, do not go back to the village. He sends this man home, but it's implied that he's saying to him, you know, don't go back there and tell anyone, just head home. And that seems like a very strange thing, particularly with the first one. You've just given a man who can't speak his voice, and the first thing you're asking him to do is not to talk. seems a bit bizarre. How could he expect that of someone? But we've already said Jesus was at a point where things were getting dangerous. In Matthew 12:14, just after Jesus has healed on the Sabbath and taught on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees aren't very happy, it says they went away and they plotted how they could kill Jesus. And Jesus knew this was coming. And he was probably just trying to give himself a little bit more time. He was still trying to sort these disciples out, make sure they're ready for when he's not around. And he was trying to give himself a little bit more time. He will have had good reason to ask these people not to speak about what has happened. He doesn't want any more of a frenzy than there already was. But he couldn't stop his kingdom coming. He couldn't stop the mission. It all had to go forward. But he's probably just asking them, just so his what's to come for him isn't coming any quicker than it already was. But they couldn't stop speaking. They were just too excited. In the end of last year, in October, Josh and I were at Church at Five on Strawberry Vale, because Josh was doing a talk there. And this clashed with a very important football fixture. Sorry, I realise this is football again. It was West Ham, and they were playing Spurs. Now, I know that those of you that are football fans, this fixture happened yesterday, but it's really not relevant to this story. So we're just going to not mention that at all. So we're looking at last season, which in October, West Ham had an awful, awful start to the season. And it carried on throughout. But we started really, really badly. We were in the relegation zone. We're not scored. We've got no strikers. Not scoring any goals. It's really bad. So we were going to Church at Five, and West Ham were playing Spurs. For some reason, if you're brought up a West Ham fan, you're taught to hate Tottenham. Whereas Tottenham fans don't really hate West Ham. It seems to be a one-way thing. So for me, it's a big game. For Tottenham fans, you're probably thinking West Ham, we've got bigger fish to fry. But we went to church, and Josh started doing his talk, and I was sort of concentrating, and then part of me just, I had my phone in my hands, and I thought, oh, I'm expecting the worst, but I'll just have a little look. Sorry, Josh. If it was somebody else speaking, I probably wouldn't have done it, but I knew I could get away with it. So I did, and if you're on your phone now, it's probably all I deserve. but so I had a little look, and it was 1-0 to West Ham. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, 1-0. But it didn't mean that much because disappointment comes quite quickly when you support West Ham. 1-0 doesn't mean anything until the final whistle goes. And a few minutes later, I looked and we'd scored again. It was 2-0. I thought, gosh, wow. Getting a bit excited. I was sort of, I can't remember what you spoke on, sorry. But, but I was zoning in and out. And then a few minutes later, it's 3-0. There's a few minutes to go, 3-0. And I'm looking around me, thinking, oh, gosh, I need to speak to someone. My dad and my brother are at the game, and I thought, oh, gosh, I need to call them up, see what's happening, see what the celebrations are like. This is ridiculous. We're going to move up the table. I think we moved about 5 places out of the relegation zone, finally winning an away game. It was a time to celebrate. But I looked around me, and obviously everyone was focusing on Josh. I looked around, and there's a guy called Dave, who is a West Ham United fan. And I saw him, and I had a big grin, and I had my phone in my hand, and I think he realized what I was doing. And I just got out of my seat, and I just went over and showed him. And he got all excited, and he started, there's a couple of lads that are Tottenham fans there, and I think he started teasing them a bit. And it all got a bit sort of, I don't know, people got a bit distracted. But church at 5 is quite informal and fun, and it was all okay. I just wasn't really in control of what I was doing. It was that exciting. I just thought, you know, and it wasn't the place to sort of get up and start talking to somebody about what was going on with the football. There was more important things happening. But for me right now, right there, I was just, I don't know, a bit overwhelmed. And we did, we beat Spurs 3 times last season. Okay, we won't talk about yesterday, but that was we had an awful season, but we did beat Spurs. So that was the only positive. But for me, and God has done much more amazing things in my life than as beating Spurs. But the point was that I just had this sort of lack of control. And I'm sure you've all been given, probably not to do with football at all, probably real life people stuff. You've all had good news where you just can't, because somebody's asked you to keep to yourself, but you just physically can't. And this seems to be what's happened here, that Jesus has asked them to keep quiet, and they just seem to have this lack of control. It said they're overwhelmed with excitement in the first one. And it says, he actually makes the deaf hear and the dumb speak. That's how they reacted. And that's a reference to Isaiah 35, where it says, then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer and the mute tongue shout for joy. And this is about the renewal of Israel after years of exile. And we see Jesus, we see that God is restoring creation through Jesus. In these passages, this is part of God restoring creation. But we hear about these sort of things week in, week out at church. We have our own stories about restoration, our own stories about healing. We hear about people who've been physically healed, people who've been spiritually healed. We hear, like we had today, good news stories. About all that God is doing. We hear about what missional communities are doing. There's so many good news stories. There's so many stories of transformation that we hear all the time. And I think the challenge is that we should be as excited as these people, that we should leave this place not able to keep a lid on things like these people were. And I guess the challenge is, if somebody asked you, you know, Jesus wouldn't ask us to keep quiet about what he's doing, but if somebody did ask us to say, right, I know God is doing so much in your life, he's doing so much in the people around you, but what I need you to do this week is to not tell anybody about what Jesus is doing. What I need you to do is not be involved in anything that points towards Jesus. How different would our week look? Because if it's not very different, then maybe we need to be challenged by this story. We need to find that excitement again, hear those stories, and just not be able to keep a not be able to keep them to ourselves. So I think there's a few ways that we can respond to this. The first way is, obviously, these are two stories of God's amazing power to physically heal. It might be that your response is something physical that you need prayer for. But there's also another story sort of going on in between all this. In the second passage, which is in Mark chapter 8, the passage just before this healing of the blind man, there's a passage between Jesus and the disciples where Jesus is trying to teach them about the Pharisees, and they think he's angry because they've forgotten bread. a strange passage where, and then Jesus says to them, "You've got eyes to see, you've got eyes but you do not see, you've got ears but you do not hear." They seem to be so far away from understanding who Jesus is. Then we have this healing with saliva of this blind man. And then the passage just after that is where Peter says, "Jesus, you are the Messiah." That there seems to be this spiritual healing of understanding who Jesus is. And this passage is in the middle of that. And I don't think that's any accident by the writer of Mark. So it might be that there's some sort of spiritual healing that needs to take place, where you've been piecing together who Jesus is, like the disciples were, and that you just need to come to God and just ask for that greater understanding of who Jesus is, if you've never had that, this closeness. And this links directly to this thing of intimacy that we were talking about, that you need to know intimacy like Jesus had with these two people, that you need to feel that closeness. And that might be something that you had and that you've lost, and that you've felt like you've pushed Jesus quite distant. Or it might be something that you've never had, that this might be something new that you could respond to, and maybe you need to pray with somebody about finding that intimacy and finding that closeness. And it might be to do with what we're talking about, with Jesus's response and standing with this man in his wounds and in his pain. That your response might be this week that you know there's somebody who's in a really bad way that you need to just step out. And you know it's going to be painful because it's going to hurt you, but you need to just be with somebody in their pain, in their sorrow, whilst you pray and seek restoration for them. And the final thing is what we've just been talking about, to declare what Jesus has done. It might be that you just need, that you had this excitement when you first became a Christian. You heard these stories and you just couldn't help but share them with other people. But it might be that you just need perhaps some fresh eyes to see all the amazing stuff that you hear these stories, but they sort of kind of go over you. Oh, they seem exciting now, but you wake up on a Monday morning and then you're going to work and there's so much other stuff going on. That the excitement sort of seems to go. And we read this passage and you want to have that excitement, that overwhelmed amazement that we read about here, a renewed passion for sharing who Jesus is. And that's not just telling people about transformation, about things that are happening. It might be through joining a ministry that points towards Jesus' compassion, the compassion that we've seen in this. It's just an overfill of what who Jesus is and what he's doing, that might be something that you need to do to respond to that. So the band are going to come back up and going to lead us in a song. And I'm just going to ask, if everyone could just stand, I'm just going to pray a prayer over us. Jesus, we thank you that you're a compassionate healer, that you reach out to us in our afflictions and stand with us in our pain. We pray that as you work in our lives and in the lives of those around us, that we would have a response that communicates to others how amazing it is that you are restoring hope and healing the world. Give us a passion to speak of you in words and actions, and where we need healing for physical and spiritual blindness and deafness, we ask that you would bring restoration. Thank you that you are with us in all that we do, and that through you, all things will be made new. Amen.